Shaiftin v'shaitrim titen lecha b'chol sherecha shra Hashem ulekecha nesin lecha lishvatecha. V'shaftu esa mishpat tzedek. I just want to make two ha'aros on this pasuk. Number one, it tells us to appoint shaiftim and shaitrim, judges, and people who guarantee the law is carried out, officers, enforcers. First it says b'chol sherecha on all of your gates. And then it says, in your tribes. So the question is, why does it say in all of your gates, and then does it say in all of your tribes? So Rashi explains the Pashup Shat. It means the gates of your tribes. I mean, Rashi was b'chol shorecha, b'chol ir v'ir, lishvatecha, Musav al titein lecha. It's going back on the beginning of the pasuk. Shoftim v'shoftim titein lecha lishvatecha b'chol shorecha. Rashi is repeating himself. Okay, Rashi, we have to study Rashi in more depth. I want to say a drush to build upon Rashi that there are two different types of judges that we need. We need a judge to judge internally. Yeah, let's know in the community itself. You have a community of people. And they're all pretty much the same hashkafa. You have one shevet. Let's assume that each one of the 12 shvatim in Klal Yisrael, they had a certain way of living, a certain hashkafa. And every so often there are fights, there are disputes, whether it's money, whether it's areas of marriage, there's machloikis. The goal of a shevet is to settle disputes. Okay, the goal is ultimately after they settle the dispute of money, of who rightfully owns the money, there will be peace. The goal is very clear in Olam HaFarshim. The goal of a shofet is not just to award the money to the rightful owner, it's also that when the day is over, they walk out of court, there is a clear understanding that this person is correct according to halacha, and there should be no reason any one of the two should hate each other. There should be peace. Does it always work? No, probably not most of the time. But that is the ultimate goal. But what happens if there is a dispute between two tribes, two shvatim? Is there to be a judge? Is there to be a judge to settle disputes between tribes? See, today we live in a world, unfortunately, where there are many different flavors of Judaism. Okay. Many different types of communities. Among the Hasidim, you can divide up the Hasidim into all the various groups. Amongst the Litvish Olam, well, the Litvish Olam is a different community totally than the Hasidish world. And amongst the Litvish Olam, there are many groups, also many different types of groups. Then you have the Svartish world. That's a whole new world. That's a whole new breed. And amongst the Svartim, there are many different groups. And then you can talk about Israelis. Okay, you can divide the Israelis in different groups. So we have, in each community, there are batei dinim. If you have a matter that requires a bezdin in Flatbush, you have people that you're familiar with, you go to a bezdin, there are plenty of batei dinim. The svardim have their own batei dinim. The chassidim have their own dayan. They have their own dayan. But what happens when there is a dispute between the chassidim and the Misnagdim? What happens when there's a dispute between the Svardim and the Hasidim? Very rarely do we find that the dispute is resolved. We just disengage. You do your thing, I will do my thing, and we'll have nothing more to do with each other. When you, amongst your own, you have no choice but to reach a dispute resolution. What? No, I'm not talking about two individuals have a dispute. One is a Sephardi, one is an Ashkenazi. I'm not talking about that. That you go to a best, you'll decide you'll decide between you two. I'm talking about when the entire Shevet is at odds with another Shevet. Right. So what happens? It's very, very common that in society, when there are disputes amongst individuals within society, we resolve the disputes. It's very common. Every community has batei dinim, has batei dinim which are able to resolve disputes. But what we don't find, unfortunately, in history, is that when you have different groups that have disputes between each other, instead of resolving the dispute, they just, being that each community is so big and so independent, there's no resolution. And they separate, they disengage, and one community has nothing to do with another community.
Did they go to a Kurdish court at that point?
I'm not talking about money. Let's talk about hashkafa. Hashkafa. You'll not sit on the same table, you'll not come together, a communal issue. Let us say there's a matter that is affecting the entire community. Mm-hmm. It's affecting Ashkenazim, it's affecting Sfardim. So,
it's a kashrus issue. That's what the main thing is today.
All different types of things. Community issues. There's a threat. If there is a threat to Klal Yisrael, so the Sfardim will go and they'll handle it their way, and the Ashkenazim will, because unfortunately, you find more. You find it's more common where there is no achdus between different groups. Why is there no achdus? Because we see things differently, and we're not willing to make peace to the degree where it should be natural to come together. The pasuk here says two things. Shoftim v'shoytim titin l'cha b'chol shi'arecha. In the community itself, if there is a dispute, if there is a dispute in the community itself, you have one group, one community, Flapush. There's a dispute in Flapush. Let me say my piece. Let me say, please. If there's a dispute in Flapush, so amongst the people in Flapush, there are many batei dinim you can go to resolve your disputes. But titen lecha b'chol sharecha. That's number one. But what happens if there's a dispute between Flatbush and Borough Park? Flatbush is so big, we don't need Borough Park. Borough Park is so big, they don't need Flatbush. So you know what? Instead of resolve the issue and see eye to eye and make peace between us, no matter what it is, whether it's a communal issue that affects talks about money, whether it's hashkafa, that being that we're so big, each one is so big, it's not necessary to make peace and to go to mishpat, to a central authority, to smooth out the differences between the two communities. We'll go our way and you go your way, and there is no peace between us. We don't need there to be peace because we're so independent. The pasuk goes on to say, "Asher Hashem Elokecha nosein l'cha lishvatecha." And as Rashi says, "Shoftim v'shoytim" is to be repeated. We have this idea in Tanakh all the time. You repeat words. "Shoftim v'shoytim titin l'cha b'chol shirecha." And nochamo, "Shoftim v'shoytim titin l'cha lishvatecha," meaning when there are two shvatim that are at each other's throats, there should be, you shall see to it, that there is a central authority that's on top of everyone that can settle the score between two major groups which really don't need to make peace. They're so independent, they can go live their own ways. Now go a step further. Go a little bit further. Look at the difference of expression. It first starts out, Shoifti v'shoitim titen l'cha. You do it. And then it says, b'chol shirech, asher Hashem elokecha, nosein l'cha. What does that mean? Nosein, now simply you'll tell me, nosein l'cha is going on the land. Hashem is you. Okay, but nosein l'cha, we can learn, is going on the shoftim and the shoitrim. Who is appointing, who is the one that is putting into position a judge? Well, the pasuk says something very interesting. If you want to learn with it in a homiletic approach to the pasuk, if you want to learn this way, when it comes to your own gates, okay, the community itself. Okay, the community itself, Flatbush, we have the ability, we don't need any help. We can go into the yeshivas and find the best people we can find the best people. Titen licha, do it yourself. But when it comes to appoint a judge that's going to be on top of both communities, lishvatecha, for that, you know, so that's not in our power. For that, you need special siyata d'shmaya. There can be one judge or one body, one organization, one Sanhedrin that both communities, Flatbush and Borough Park, will both be willing to go to an authority that we both have full faith and confidence that will settle the dispute between us, that we can be seamless, see eye to eye. That type of authority, you need a special siyata d'shmaya, asher Hashem Elokecha noisem lach. That's beyond us. But if you really want it, Hashem will give it to you. But you have to want it. If you want it, you don't have the power to go and find an authority on your own. But Hashem will give you. Hashem will work it out that it will appear out of nowhere an authority that's so big and so beloved that two massive communities will be willing to submit to that authority and to work out a resolution to any issue that affects them both. So what am I trying to do? I'm trying to make note of two things here, of this pasuk. The pasuk, there are two interesting things about it. The pasuk is a very difficult pasuk. The first pasuk of the parasha. Number one, it says, the judges shall be appointed where? B'chol she'orecha. Number two, it says, it shall be appointed lishvatech. Why do you have to mention both? For the shvatim and for the gates? And Rashi says, in the gates of every shevet. Within the, I mean, what's going on over here? That's number one. Number two, why does it say first, titen lecha? And then does it say, Asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lecha? Who's the giver? Are we giving or is Hashem giving? So I know you'll tell me with the Pshut Shel Mikra, Asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lecha means Hashem is giving you land. Hashem is not referring to the judges. But that's not necessarily so simple because the subject of this pasuk are the shoiftim. If you put these two ideas together, I think it's teaching us a very powerful drush, not necessarily the pshat, but there's a drush, and that is we need to have justice amongst ourselves in our own community. And sometimes a community does not see something the same way a different community understands a concept, whether it's a matter of kashrus, whether it's a matter of the eruv, whether it's a matter of gerushin, the kiddushin, whether it's a matter of mammon, it's a matter of dealing with the government. There are different approaches. And each community has a different way, a different derech. And it would be very advantageous if we can come together, powers in numbers. But we don't see eye to eye. And therefore there's a dispute, there is a conflict, there is strife. So being that we are so powerful, each one is so independent, we can completely disengage. No, Hashem says, I want there to be a shofet lishvatecha, to resolve issues, disputes between two different shvatim. And I know that to find an authority that can do that, that can bring together two different communities, is a very tall order. So Hashem says, don't worry, I'll take care of it. I got you covered for that. When it comes to your internal problems, you have enough, you can figure out to find yourself at your own diet. You can find, walk the streets, you'll find the bezdin. But when you need a central authority to resolve communities together, if you are willing, you're willing to have peace, Hashem says, guess what? I'll help you. I will help you. I will asher Hashem Elokecha. Hashem will provide a shofet and a shoiter lishvatecha, to serve in judgment between two communities, to smooth out conflicts, strife, and issues between two different communities. Okay, let's go to another.
Who is responsible to appoint the judges?
I can't take questions now. I'm sorry, afterwards. I'm sorry. I cannot take questions now. What? We have. I can't take it. Let's go. Let's go to another idea. Okay. Let me jump ahead to the end of the parasha. I'm going to come back. Let's discuss. Oh, this Vard is very chaviv to me. I'm going to jump ahead. End of the parasha, we learn about the mitzvah of war, going out to war. Torah tells us that there's war. Everyone has to go to Mulchemes. The pasuk of here is describing the Mulchemes Rishus. We're not discussing the Mulchemes Mitzvah, Rashi says, because the Mulchemes Mitzvah, filu chasa michupasa kala michupasa, everyone goes to it. But let's say we have a Mulchemes Rishus. It's very hard to define what is the Mulchemes Rishus, so it's really more theoretical. To try to define what exactly is a Mulchemes Rishus, basically everything that we can imagine will be considered a Mulchemes Mitzvah. So let's talk theoretically. The Mulchemes Rishus, everyone comes to the battlefield, and the Koyein Mashuach Muhammad gets up, and he makes an announcement. Mi ho'ish asher bona bayis v'loy chanocho yeleich v'yashuv leveisoy. Go home. Why? Because he may die in war. He may die in war. Let me read the pasuk. That's the Karen, that's the vineyard. He will inaugurate his home, a vineyard, and then a man got married, he may die in war. Okay. And then it talks about the person that is afraid of this Azeirois, he also should go home. Why does it have to say the ish acher? The pasuk should say it's just pen yomus ba mulchama. It's not fair. A person went and he built a home. He made a plan. He worked very, very hard. He worked many years to earn enough money to provide a down payment, take out a mortgage, and he'll die. All of his hard effort has gone for nothing. Is it really necessary for the Torah to conclude pen yomus ba milchama the ish acher yachnichen, and someone else will move into this beautiful home that he built? Is that really necessary? And when it comes to a vineyard, is it really necessary to say the ish acher yichalalenu? Is it necessary to say the ish acher yikochenu will marry you, will live with her? Is it really necessary? So let me two answers. One answer is not my answer. I saw this in name of a said. I once even said this over, probably a while ago. Okay, it doesn't come to me at this moment. But the answer, it's not unique to the Sefer. It's other sources as well. It's the Agmas Nefesh. That indeed this is an insight into human psychology. That it's worth knowing that someone else is going to benefit from your hard labor is even more painful than planning, working hard to accomplish, and not achieving. It's one thing a person works very, very hard, you plan to achieve, to succeed, and you don't make it to the end. That's agmas nefesh. But to know on the battlefield, when you're struggling, that it's the ish acher, all of your hard work is going to go to an ish acher, that pain that someone else will derive benefit from your hard labor is even a greater tsar than dying and no one deriving benefit. You build a house, the house will remain empty forever until it collapses on its own. That's a lot of tsar. I spent years earning enough money to buy the materials to build a house. I was about to move in. I go out to battle. And now I realize I'm going to die. I'm injured. I'm wounded. I'm not going to come home. I'm going to die. And that beautiful home that I spent all this time preparing to live, to move into, I will never reap the benefits. That's a lot of agmas nefesh, no question about it. You don't want the person on the battlefield when he's about to die should suffer that emotion, should suffer that feeling that all of my hard labor went for nothing. But that's nothing relative to knowing, the pain of knowing that not only will I not benefit from this, but that other guy across the street who had his eye on my house, he is the one that's going to benefit. The ish acher, what?
I don't think that. At least it has some value. Why would I be? It's not my enemy.
This is what they say. This is what the psychologists say. It's, think about it. It's, I work so hard for someone else to benefit. It's not so simple. What? A person goes, they fix up their house. Think about it today. A person goes, think about it today. People, they live in their home. Everybody said, please. It's really hard to compete with everyone. People, they live in their home, they're there, they own their life, and they always need a new bathroom. The bathroom is dilapidated. It's horrible. The kitchen is horrible. And they have the money. They have the money in the bank to make a new bathroom. They have the money to make a new kitchen. They don't fargin themselves. And now, for whatever reason, they're past retirement, and they want to move away for whatever reason, I have to sell the house. So how much am I going to get for the house? I'm going to get for the house $1 million. But if I go and I do a new spend, $30,000 doing a new bathroom, I spend $50,000 doing a new kitchen, I'll be able to sell the house for $1.5 million.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily correct, but make believe yes. Make believe you all understand what I'm saying. Hey, Rabbi Sai, please, let me say my piece. Please, Rabbi Sai, please. There's no need to laugh. Rabbi Sai, please. So we all understand the principle. Isn't that tremendous? Think of the agmas nevesh that goes through the mind of the person. Here, my whole life, I had the money. I had the money to make the bathroom. I had the money for the kitchen. I didn't forgive myself. And now I'm making a beautiful new bathroom for who? For someone else.
No, but eventually you're getting the money.
Okay, please, Rabbi said, let me say my piece. Okay, who? This is an agmas nefesh. Good, you'll get back your money. You're going to get back the money, but the bottom line is you're going to see the beautiful bathroom, the beautiful kitchen, and you'll be nene from it for 1 week. For 1 week before you sell the house. I could have had this bathroom 30 years ago. I could have had the same $1.5 million now. So it's not an agmas nefesh. Look at that. I'm talking to a contractor. We're making all the cheshbonos, all the details. For who? For an ish acher. It's tremendous agmas nefesh. Okay, leave it with that. That's one pshat. Now let me tell you another pshat. Another pshat. Over here it says, pen yomus ba'mulchama, the ish acher, Yachniche. Now, I'll tell you one of two things. Whoever said the word the ish acher means and. I could show you many examples where the word vav, all depends on the context, means or. It means or. One of two things will happen. Either I'll go to war and I'll die. Then, like I said in the beginning, you won your argument, you're prepared, you spent, okay. Or maybe Rachmana Litzlan, maybe the person will not die. Baruch Hashem will survive the war. He will survive the war. He'll come out of the war alive and well. But you know what happens when you go to war?
Mental.
Everybody said, please, let me say my piece. You know what happens when you go to war? And you see death, and you see horrible things. And you see all the ugly things that go on in war, you become a different person. What's going to happen here? I'm going to war. I spent all this time. I had goals to move into this home. This home is going to be a place of Torah, mitzvahs. It's going to be a base vad lachachonim. I'm only imagining my Shabbos guest. I'm imagining it's going to be a center for chesed and Torah, what I'm going to do in this house. Okay? I'm about to move in. I'm about to put up the mezuzah. And then I get a letter from the army. You better show up. There's a war. You better show up. You better have to come to battle. I go to battle. I come there. They give me my weapons and my boots. Go to the battlefield. I go to the battlefield. I'm sitting on the battlefield. Oh yeah, I might die. If I die on the battlefield, you know what? Wow, all my hard work for nothing. Agmas nefesh. Okay. He goes out to war. Spends 6 months on his tour in Afghanistan, Iraq, wherever he does, And guess what? He doesn't die. He comes back alive with a purple heart. Okay, he gets all the big medals. He's in all the newspapers. He gets all the coverage. He does incredible things for the country. You name it. Whatever you want to say. But you know something? He's not the same person anymore. He's an ish acher. When it says the ish acher yachnichenu, it's going on yourself. You know, when I come back now, I originally planned it was going to be a base vad lachachamim. I'm not so much interested in Torah anymore. It's going to be a place for chesed. You know, what you see and you experience in war can have such a horrible effect on a person. It could make you into another person. This bias that you plan, you had a model in your mind, a vision in your mind, what kind of bias you're going to live in, what kind of vineyard you're going to have, what you're going to use it for, what kind of life you're going to create with your wife, who you're engaged to. Now when you come back from the war, from the battlefield, alive, I'm not the same person. I've been affected deeply. My hashkafa has changed. My values in life have changed for the worse. I'm an ish acher. And that is a sin. That is a crime. That is the Torah says we don't want that. If you went and you exerted yourself to establish a bias, to establish a mokoyim with a hashkafa, with a goal of kedusha, we're afraid what's going to happen. Monafshach. Either you'll die and all of that will go for nothing, or you'll, even worse, shpen yomus tamuchama, or worse, you won't die, but you'll be a different person. You'll be the ish acher yachnechem. Okay, it's a whole different twist. Like the first idea is you are that ish acher, and it's not what you wanted. Okay, now you get a question.
My wife has an uncle who was an American soldier in the Far East during World War II, and he came out not perfectly. He was exposed to terrible things.
Right, exactly, exactly.
So,
he was first. Yeah.
So what are we saying? Are we saying that we only want people to fight who have no attachments? I mean, this is a unique situation.
This is
what we fight for, is to protect those very things to which we are.
But this person isn't stuck in the middle. This fellow is now in a very unique situation. He has very great plans, and he's right in the middle of the planning stage and the implementation of those plans. So for this person, since if he will go to war and come back alive, his whole mind will be played around with. It's very disturbing that my hope, my plan, has now totally changed. If a person already planned to build a house, and he built a house, and he lived in the house, and he fulfilled his dream, and now goes to war and comes back with a different hashkafa, okay, fine. So you have a different hashkafa, and now you're going to change the house that you built, and you built, and then you actually lived in with your original plan, you're going to change it for something else. That's not so terrible. You've changed your hashkaf. Okay, so you change your hashkaf. You're going to make a new. You're going to have a new derech in life. But here, where you're planning to follow a certain derech in life, and right smack in the middle, you're traumatized, and that caused a change in your hashkaf, and now you come to fulfill it. That's not healthy. That's not healthy. And that's what the Torah says. We don't want you to be the ish acher in between your plan and the beginning of the implementation of your plan. It's a question, yes, or support?
Shotim v'shotim. Who is responsible to appoint the judges and shotim?
The people community. Of the community. The community.
I say this one. No, Nick, at the election of Israel.
You take a vote.
I want this, I want this, I want this.
A vote, like today in America, in Eretz Yisrael, you take a vote. You have a party.
You want that like this?
A vote, yeah. Absolutely. They voted. Yeah, Chazal said they took votes. Absolutely. You vote. You have to appoint.
Lecha, I mean, you this, you this, you this.
You have a system where you responsibly elect, appoint. That's it, that's it. You appoint, there's a responsible way to appoint judges. Okay, let's go now to another idea. Right,
that's
correct. Exactly. Post-traumatic stress order. PTSD. What?
PTSD.
Okay, let's now go to another idea. Okay, let's go to another idea. We learned this week, one of the very big topics of this week's parasha is the king, the melech. The melech in Klal Yisrael. Pasuk says the time is going to come when, we know the history of Klal Yisrael, there was shoftim. There was shoftim in the period, not to be confused with the shoftim in this week's parasha, but there was a period of judges. And then came a time when they said, we want a melech. Shmuel Hanavi was Moshech, first Shaul, and then David. And Parsha of the melech here appears in this week's Parsha. Let me find the page. Okay, the beginning of the Parsha. Ki savoy el oretz kev sheni, el asher Hashem l'chech nasin l'chol yishtov yishavt above yamarta asim olay melech. I want a melech, chol hagoyim asher svivosai. So the Torah says, you want a melech, you could have a melech. Soyim tasim olecha melech asher yivcha asher olekecha boi mikere vachecha. Okay, but there are conditions. Rak lo yarbeloi susim. Number two, vilo yarbeloi noshim. Number three, you can't have too many horses, couldn't have too many wives. And number three, v'chesef v'zahav lo yarbe loy me'oid. Okay, three conditions. Number one, not too many horses. Number two, not too many wives. Number three, not too much money. Now, by the way, Derech Agav, why after these three? So I saw one of the Mepharshim says something that is very, very fascinating. And it's a very big musa haskel for every single person, even though they're not a melech. A horse, Chazal identify a horse as the creature in this world that is the biggest baal taiva.
What?
I don't know what it's. I don't know what they say in Wikipedia, but Chazal say a horse zimras susim zimrasan. When Chazal want to identify a person who is a baal taiva, a person who is out of control, needs a cold shower very quickly, a person whose hormones are totally out of control, it says like a horse. The Egyptians were out of control. The Egyptians, the land was not called the Ervas Haaretz for no reason. Okay, Egypt was a land that Chazal say Shetufei Zima, steeped in lewdness, zima, meloshen of arayos. It's called the ervas haaretz. And the pasuk says about the Egyptians, the zirmas susim zirmasim. Their discharge is the discharge of a horse. Just like a horse is out of control, okay, out of control, the Egyptians are out of control. Now, we all know as a given that we are influenced by our environment. It's very strange. All the things that a king has, the horses, who cares about horses? The other things, the king should not have too much good food. You don't want him to get heart disease. Man yarech yomim. Or the king should not have too much entertainment. Should not. There are so many things you can do. There's an infinite number of things that the Torah could have focused on by limiting the koyach of the king. Horses? Come on. All the things that, who would ever imagine, if you were writing, if you were making conditions, there's not one person that would list in what that a Jewish king should not get a little carried away with himself, that we should limit, we should put upon him restrictions.
Well, like cars.
Yeah.
Too many cars? Why not? Why can't you have too many cars? There are probably a lot bigger things on the list. If you would give a task to everyone in this room, there are three things we do not want a king to have too many of because he may get a little carried away with himself. Whatever. I guarantee you, there's not one person here or anyone that's going to put on the list, don't have too many horses. You would say maybe women, okay, I could get that. Maybe when it comes, don't have too much money, I get that. Horses? Come on, horses? So you want to say even if horses, they have cars. Don't have too many cars in your driveway. Okay, don't have too many horses. I think there are other things. Don't have too many nukes. Don't have too many nukes, right? Not cars. Too many, you want to say that the horse is equivalent to a nuke? I don't think so. Don't have too many warriors, too many soldiers. There are many, many other things that you can would put on the top of the list, not horses. Why then did the Torah select horse? I saw it in the safe, very powerfully
said. It says why.
Why?
That it should return to Mitzrayim.
So there are many things that will allow them to return to Mitzrayim.
They should buy from there.
Wait.
The most
he's talking.
Famous
he's talking. All right. So the answer is better than the questions in this particular case. A person is affected by their environment. A horse is a creature that is a pure Baal Taiva in regard to Arayos, in regard to Noshim, without any restriction whatsoever. A male horse sees a female horse, that's it. It's over. There's no restriction. There's no holding back. There's no discipline. There's no musa. That's how it is. That's a horse. If you live in a society where horses are all over the place, wherever you turn, there's a horse. Horses everywhere. That affects you. If the essence of a horse is a creature that in regard to noshim, in regard to women, the other gender, there's just no holding back, and you live in an environment, that's what you're surrounded by, you don't think it's going to have an effect on you as well? If this is what the horses do, and it's all I see the whole day are horses, it's going to rub off on a person. And then what's going to happen? The person is going to be nirshol with noshim. And what happens when you have too many noshim? Well, to maintain your taiva, to pay all of the zoinos, you got to pay. You need a lot of money. These three things are sequence. If you live in an environment where there's no discipline, it's going to have an effect on you. You're also going to want to have a lot of noshim. And when you have a lot of noshim, what comes next? A lot of bills. And then you need to have a lot of money. So it's telling the melech, it all starts with the type of environment that you establish for your country. If you establish the country to be a materialistic society, the goal of the melech is the gashmis. If you live in a society, you're going to become the melech now. What's your job as the melech? Your job is not to give shiurim, daf yomi. That's not your job. A mayor that gives a daf yomi shir, get out of that city. If the mayor of your city gives a daf yomi shir every single day, then you're in the wrong city. Because then the electricity is gonna things are not gonna things the mayor is busy learning and not doing his job. You know what kind of city you're gonna be in very soon. If the king establishes for himself a society where there are horses all over the place, that rubs off on the people. If the horses are engaging in this activity, then the people also need to engage in having a lot of women. And when there's a lot of taiva, then we need a lot of money to maintain this lifestyle. And it comes a point in time when the bubble bursts, and you can't maintain this lifestyle. And then you're in a lot of trouble. That's the message. It's not just a message to the king of, oh, these are the rules of the king. We don't want you to have too many horses. The Pasuk says, Laman Harba, you go back to Mitzrayim, but it's all the same idea. Because in Mitzrayim, I mean, that's all this all this taiva. The Ervas, the reason why Mitzrayim was the Ervas Haaretz, because in Mitzrayim they had the best horses. It was the land of horses. You'll go back to Egypt because that's where all the horses are. And why is Egypt called the Ervas Haaretz? Zimras, Susim, Zimrasan. You're a melech. Your role is to curb this quest for materialism. Everything in moderation. In America, that's not what America is about. America is
capitalism.
It's capitalism, and adarabah, as much as you could afford. Seek as much as you can. The goal of the President of the United States is that every man, the ultimate goal is, should have prosperity. For what purpose? To satisfy his taivas. Okay, it's not our country. We're not our country. This is not the, we always think that this is our country. This is not our country. We live in Eretz Yisrael. We happen to be guests over here. This is not a healthy attitude. The goal of the Melech of Yisrael is, the Melech's role is to monitor the people's taivas.
Which king?
Good question. Good question. That's what the Pasuk says. Okay, now let's go now. Let me go now to another idea. This parasha, Parasha Shoftim, is a very special parasha for all of us for a very important reason. It's the end. What do you mean it's the end? And we know when it comes to Simchas Torah and we come to V'zois HaBracha, oh, that's the real end, right? You make a big party, Kiddush, we have a whole day to celebrate. But Parasha Shoftim, we have Taryag Mitzvahs in the Torah, 613 Mitzvahs. The Taryag Mitzvahs are broken down between the positive Mitzvahs and the negative Mitzvahs. How many negative Mitzvahs are there? 365. How many positive Mitzvahs are there? 248. There are more negative Mitzvahs than there are positive Mitzvahs. Do you realize that this week's Parasha, Parasha Shoftim, is the end of the 365 loisases. The Rambam, now there are many ways to calculate the Taryag Mitzvahs. It's one of the biggest mysteries of this world, to calculate exactly, categorize, to enumerate Taryag Mitzvahs. The Rambam has his technique. The Ramban has his technique. The Baal Halachis Gedolos has his technique. The Baal Halachis Ketanis has his technique. The Chinuch has his technique, and you'll probably find from another 10 Rishonim that they wrote their own technique in coming to enumerate the Taryag Mitzvahs, and there's a lot of Sfarim trying to show why the Rambam counts this mitzvah and does not count that mitzvah, and so on and so forth. But the Rambam, okay, who's one of the big major authorities in this matter, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, where he enumerates the Taryag Mitzvahs, when you want to go to the very, very end of the 365 negative commandments, the last three are the rules of the melech. A melech may not have too many horses. That's the third to last. The second to last may not have too many wives. And the finale, Acharoin Chaviv, the last of the 365 loisaseis is what we read over here. V'chesev v'zohov lo yarbe loy me'oid. Why not? So now it doesn't say explicitly, when it comes to the horses, you should not go back to Egypt. When it comes to the wives, they should not sway your heart. But the Pasuk and Farshim say there's a reason given also for the money. You go further after we just jump down a few more psukim down, and that is Leman Yilmad Liyira Es Hashem Elokav Lishmar Kol Divrei Torah Zos Fuchulu Levilti. You know why not have too much money? Because with money comes Gaiva. If the Melech has too much money, Levilti Rum Levavoy Me'echav, he'll become arrogant. So that Leman, the last of the Loisa says, is a mitzvah in order to guarantee the king, Yarich Yomim al Mamlachtoi Hu Uvanov Bikerev Yisrael. Every man is a king in his own home. Every man is a melech. Except those who are married. Oh, it says the Chesh HaChazal, Choson is doymel lemelech. So who's the melech? The bocher. When you're a bocher, you're a melech. When you get engaged, you're no longer a melech. You're doymel lemelech. And when you get married, you're an eved. You're an eved. Okay, but putting jokes aside, every person is a melech to some degree. Every person has authority. And every person has Taryag Mitzvahs. Every person has Taryag Mitzvahs. The last of the Loisaseis is not to have too much money. Isn't halfway of a fellow? Why not? Levilti rum levavoi. In order that a person should not be arrogant, me'echav, and lord over your fellow man, to look down at other people. Look at the car that he drives. Look at the car that I drive. No comparison. Okay, look at the clothing he wears, I wear. Okay, no comparison. Levilti rum levavoi me'echav. This is the Gemara. There's something to be said about the end. Hakoil hoilech achar hachoisim. The end. It's a very special parasha this week. We're coming now to the very, very end. Now let's go a step further. Mefarshim point out that the word, there's a very unusual word that's used when it comes to money. It says that the melech, he should not have too much money. V'chesev v'zachov lo yarbe loy me'oid. It's the last mitzvah. And the last word of the last mitzvah of the Leisa says is the word me'oid. Now, there are two types of mitzvahs. There's a positive mitzvah and there's a negative mitzvah. Let's go back to my separation, the famous Chazal. Hashem created the world 7 days. Took a lot of, 6 days plus whatever it was. 6 days, a lot of work went into creating this world. Okay? It's a lot of work to make this world. Finally, it was over. Vayar Elokim es kol asher osa. Okay? Vihine. Toiv me'oid. The end. It was toiv me'oid. What did Chazal say? What's this? It's a very famous medrash. Everyone says this medrash. Toiv ze yetzer toiv. The good, the inclination to do good. Toiv me'oid. Ze yetzer hara. Me'oid refers to the yetzer hara. It's toiv me'oid, the yetzer hara. How could the yetzer hara be toiv me'oid? Alright, so whatever that means, it means when you conquer it, when you use it, when you enlist it in your army, when you can't beat him, join him. When you somehow you recruit him for your benefit. What is toiv? The Yetzer Tov. What is the Yetzer Tov telling you to do? To do mitzvahs. To do the positive commandments. What is the Yetzer Hara telling you to do? He's not just telling you not to do the good mitzvahs. That's a given. The Yetzer Hara is trying to persuade you to do aseirois. To do the lois ases. The Yetzer Tov's domain is the positive mitzvahs. 248 positive mitzvahs, that is under the jurisdiction of the Yetzer Tov. Under whose jurisdiction is the Lois Aseis, the 365 Lois Aseis? The Yetzer Hara. And what is the Yetzer Hara called? Tov Me'oid. It's not then a coincidence that we finally get down to the very, very end of all of the Lois Aseis. Soif Maisa v'machshava techila, the last of the loisa says, speaking to the melech, and each one of us, is not just one melech, each person is a nitzoitz of a melech. And the last mitzvah, when we finally say goodbye to the Yetzer Hara, who has jurisdiction over the loisa says, is, v'chesev v'zachov lo yarbe loy me'oid. Vayar lekem es kol asher os vihine toiv. Toiv from the very beginning. Vayam lekem he or the very beginning there was toiv, this nitzer toiv. And the very end of the bria takes all the way down to the negative. What's negative? Kesev v'zahav lo yarbe lo yimod. You know why not? The vilti rom levavoy me'echov. Don't get carried away in this world. I'm creating this world for you, Adam. I'm giving you mitzvahs. Very rarely does Hashem give us a reason for a mitzvah. And this mitzvah Hashem is telling us, remember, it's not your world. It's my world. It's a gift that you have a right to live in this world. Don't let your heart get carried away. Levilti rum levavoy me'echav levilti sur min ha-mitzvah. Do not deviate That's why it says here Ma'oid. It's connecting us to the very beginning of the Bria. Hashem created this world with the Torah. The blueprint of the Torah are the mitzvahs asay and the mitzvahs loy sasay. The loy sasay come to conclusion this week's parasha. Isn't it amazing? With the word Ma'oid. And the whole essence, the finale, the hashlama of the loy sasay captures, we have a kol ha-cholich achar hagmar, achar ha-choysam, is all of the loy sasays. It's all the same shnit. It's all levilti rum levavoy me'echav. Ben adam lachaveroi, you're nothing special. Don't, and when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, levilti sur min ha-mitzvah, not min ha-mitzvah, yomin usmoil. And the bracha is the purpose of creation. I created you for what purpose? To live. Why did I create man to live in this world? Leman yarich yomim al mamlachto hu, you and your children be kerev Yisrael. These psukim mamish fataych, the whole purpose of the Torah. The whole purpose of the Torah is not to be an arrogant person and lord and make your friends, your chaverim, miserable, ben adam lachaveroi, to be faithful to the Ribbono shel Olam loisasor, and if you'll fulfill what it says in the Torah, you'll have a good life in the world that Hashem put you into. And not only you, for your children, together with Gan's Klal and Shol. What kind of bracha? This is mamish, the summary of the purpose of Ma'aseh Bereishis. And what? To multiply the purpose of creation. If you want to go further, you want to go just extend it a little bit further, is what is the last mitzvah saseh in the Torah? It's not this parsha. It's parshas nitzavim, writing a sefer Torah. And that is, what is Torah? Ki lekach toiv nosati lochem. Toirasi al taz eitz chayim hila machazikim ba. The last mitzvah is toiv. V'ata kisvu lochem es hashira hazois. That's the last mitzvah. And the last mitzvah, I say, to write a sefer Torah. What is Torah called? It's not as precise with the word ma'oid here. We don't have the word over there. We don't have the word toiv. But what is Torah? Ki lekach toiv nosati lochem. Vayar lekim es kol asher osa. The summary is soif ma'is of the machshav v'tchila. Es kol asher osa v'hine toiv. Toiv ze yetzer toiv. Who, under whose dominion is the mitzaseh? The yetzer toiv. What's the last mitzvah, the finale, when you get to the very end? Ksiva sefer Torah. V'ata kisvu lechem b'shira zois. Torah is ki lekach toiv. What does the last loisa say? This week's parasha. V'chesev v'zahav lo yarbe loy me'oid. Why? Because that me'oid is going to lead a person down the wrong path into a state of disaster. Okay, we're just about finished. Let me just wind down with a last short thought to conclude. We'll say something Zionistic. Okay, that no one's gonna have a time to send me. We'll say something Zionistic, and this is a tremendous, very, very, very bekitzer. We learn Egla Rufa is in this week's parasha. Question: Egla Rufa. Now, by the way, let me tell you something first. Before that, what's the makar for Yiskar? What is the makar to recite Yiskar on Yom Tov? General, it's Egla Rufa. Kaper la'amcha Yisrael asher podisa. Okay, after they find the dead person, we say over here, he's dead already. The person is dead, and now they say there should be atonement for the dead. Yiskar, Rabbi Yisrael, people make a mistake. They think that when you're saying Yiskar, you're just remembering the neshama. Yiskar means kapara. The purpose of Yiskar is by remembering them and giving tzedakah to give the mason an additional darga of kapara. Yiskar is learned from the parish of Egel Arufa, where we say the only time you find in the Torah a tefillah to atone for the dead. The Iker Yiskar is on Yom Kippur, not on the Sholosh Rugom. That's the Iker Yiskar. Question. If you find a dead body, and you clearly identify the dead body as a goy, a non-Jew, is there a mitzvah of Egel Arufa? A goy, Eretz Yisrael, you're living in Eretz of Bizman Shabes HaMikdash HaYakayim, and there's a dead body on the road in between two cities, in between Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak. You find a dead body. A goy! You identify him, you know beyond the shadow of a doubt who it is, his guy. Is there a mitzvah egla rufa? It's machloikis rishonim. Some say, no, of course not. A guy is a guy. Some say, egla rufa has nothing to do with the person. It has to do with the defilement of the land. If the murder took place in this land, it doesn't matter if it's a Jew or a guy, that's a defilement of the land. The defilement of the land, of the sanctity of the land. You have to egla rufa. And from here, the land has been defiled. The land. Do this elaborate procedure and recite Yiskar. And say Yiskar. Now let's connect the dots. Okay, let's talk Zionistic talk now. Some shuls, when they say Yiskar for the Kedoshim. And then some are brave to say Yiskar, special Yiskar, for the Chayolim who died defending Eretz Yisrael. Since Eretz Yisrael, modern times, over 23,000 people gave up their lives to Eretz Yisrael. Do they deserve a special Yiskar?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, many shuls don't. They don't give them the Yiskar. But isn't it interesting that according to this, the Makar for Yiskar comes from Egla Rufa? That's a fact. And according to many Rishonim, Egla Rufa has nothing to do with the person who's dead. Because you do it even for a guy. Why? Because the land has been defiled. The land is sacred. How could it be a murder took place in the Eretz HaKodesh? Even a goy. A goy is B'Tselem Elokim. Someone murders a goy without mishpat? Okay, you kill a goy deserves to die. He deserves to die. Fine. That's right. The Canaanim were wiped out. But Stam Azoy, a goy lies there in the street. He was killed. A murder? What is this? A lawless land? Eretz HaKodesh. So connect the dots. The Kedushas HaOretz does not tolerate murder. Say Yiskar. If Yiskar is being learned from a makar of Kedushas HaOretz, how much more so is it appropriate to give special Azkara to people who died to give Kedusha to make the land where we can serve Hashem. Isn't that a simple connection between the two? Something to think about. May you all have a wonderful Shabbos.
Could I use the art side of the Sikha?